You're listening to Finance for Beginners. This is the podcast that demystifies how Wall Street investment works, including all of that confusing jargon and what it all means to you. It's explained to you by veteran investor and broker, John Lemmerman. Morning, John.
Hi, Roger.
How you doing?
I'm really good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Okay, so in the news, we've been hearing a lot lately about the Federal Reserve, okay, also known as the Fed. The heck is that?
The Federal Reserve is an independent of the government bank that is there to support the whole banking system. It is not part of the government. It is independent. The Federal Reserve is our third go-round with a central bank. We had the first bank of the United States that was a brainchild of Alexander Hamilton. That one was dissolved in 1811. The charter was not renewed because the government at the time thought that it encroached too heavily on states' rights. And then we had a second iteration, the Second Bank of the United States, that, I can't think of the president's name. It was dissolved in 1836, Andrew Jackson.
Okay.
Andrew Jackson voted to not renew it. And so we went from, I think he cast that vote in or vetoed it in 1832, but it lasted till 1836. That was the end of the charter. So we went through a long period with no central bank. And in a capitalist economy, you have booms and busts. We had two really bad ones. I think one, both were called panics. They didn't use the word depression then. And we had a bad panic in 1873, and then another one in 1907. So, interestingly enough, I think the Federal Reserve came in with the income tax right at the same time. And but we've had this Federal Reserve that is supposed to even out the economy and become sort of a shock absorber for the economy and supposedly prevent panics and depressions and keep things evened out.
So this is, it's a form of a central bank. Are they controlling currency? Do they work in conjunction with the U.S. Treasury? How does that work?
They don't have to work in conjunction with the U.S. Treasury, but they pretty much do. But they basically exist for the banks. They basically exist to be a backstop to the banks, to help banks out in time of trouble.
In what way?
Typically, it's always providing liquidity. So injecting more cash into society, into the economy, into the banking system when things look tough, when things look frail or fragile. I personally believe that to understand history, you have to understand finances and banking. And war is one of the most expensive and most profitable things that a country can do, especially if it wins the war. And I think the Federal Reserve is very much entwined in that. And I think central banks of the world are very much entwined in that. Because many times peace will happen because a country is bankrupt or they just can't afford to go to war anymore. And In my opinion, the Federal Reserves can somewhat elongate the war process by making it less necessary for peace to happen.
Gotcha. Okay, so our current Federal Reserve system, okay, can inject, so there's sort of a stopgap with the flow of money between the federal government and the banking system. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they can kind of increase the flow of money when they think it's necessary, decrease the flow of money, and kind of act as an ebb and flow faucet, if you will?
Correct.
Okay, now, how big of an operation is this? I mean, are we talking five people sitting around a coffee table, or what are we looking at
here? No, there is, I believe there are thousands of people who work for the Federal Reserve, all economists, staff, you know,
somebody's got to answer the phone.
Yeah.
Right.
There are seven Federal Reserve banks. The closest one to us here in Michigan is the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. The Dallas Bank and the New York banks are very important Federal Reserve banks. The Atlanta Federal Reserve Bank is the one where you get most of the economic projections. They project into the future what they think GDP is going to be. They're making forecasts all the time. It's a great website to go to for economic information.
Okay, let's define GDP before we go too much farther. Gross domestic product, is that right?
Yeah, gross domestic product. Gross domestic product basically is how the economy is doing as far as growing or shrinking. Okay. It's a measurement of how the economy is growing. We used to use GNP, gross national product. I think that ended in the late 60s or early 70s. They went to GDP, and it's because gross national product defined trade deficits as weighing on the economy or was shrinking the economy. So they switched to GDP in the 60s or 70s, I believe. Okay. Either LBJ or Nixon.
Okay. So we have seven Federal Reserve banks scattered throughout the U.S. Now, does each one have a primary focus? I'm assuming they all have a common goal, but does each one have, like, perhaps a primary focus? You mentioned the Atlanta one that kind of focuses on future projection.
Yeah, I would say the New York Fed is the most important Federal Reserve Bank. Tim Geithner, before he became a Treasury Secretary, was the chairman of the New York Fed. And they don't answer to the Department of Treasury, but they know each other really well. I mean, they're talking, they're communicating all the time. Mm-hmm. Secretary Joe Biden's Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, she was a former Federal Reserve chairperson.
Okay.
You know, so there are people that leave one job in the Treasury and come over to the Federal Reserve and vice versa. So there's a lot of interplay between the two.
Okay. So we have this Federal Reserve. Now, the chairman of the Federal Reserve overall apparently comes under fire from sitting administrations from time to time, depending on the president. How much authority does that individual have, the chairman of the Fed?
Truly independent.
So the chairman can just say, I'm going to do this, and that's it?
The Federal Reserve has two mandates. The first mandate is stable prices, and the second mandate was introduced in 1977 was to minimize unemployment. Those two mandates are the standard that Congress and the administration should hold the Federal Reserve to. And I believe Federal Reserve chairmen have 7-year terms. But there is no authority to fire.
But if the current chairman decides that they're going to raise or lower interest rates, is that a consensus from the other Federal Reserve banks, or is that just somebody who just sits and goes, "Yeah, let's do this and see what happens"?
It depends.
Okay.
The 7 banks are all voting members mm-hmm. of the Federal Reserve.
Right.
And I believe there's other voting members. There may be up to 14 people who can vote, along with the Federal Reserve chair.
Okay.
I can't think of the Paul Volcker. Paul Volcker, who was the Federal Reserve chairman when Reagan came in, he often did not even have meetings. He would just make an announcement, unscheduled, out of the blue, "I'm raising interest rates 2%.
So very dictatorial, if
yes,
you want to be.
Yeah. So he was probably the most powerful Federal Reserve chairman. He didn't wait for, and I don't know the behind the scenes.
Sure.
I don't know, you know, if he
may
just
have been
said,
having conversations that were on
right,
the road.
Right. Okay.
So, well, that's interesting. So they raise and lower the rates, which in turn is going to influence. Now, they're raising interest rates. He raises an interest rate by a point, okay. Does that mean that my mortgage is immediately going to be another point higher? Or, I mean, what happens here with my day-to-day boots-on-the-ground situation?
If you have an adjustable rate mortgage, mm-hmm. it could affect
okay.
your interest rate.
Okay.
If you have a fixed rate, it's not going to affect you.
Okay. So basically, what he's doing is he's raising the rates of the money that's flowing to the banks. So what we're talking about is he's raising or lowering the cost of money.
Right.
Money as a product. Right. And so if a bank needs to borrow X number of dollars, it's going to cost them this much more or this much less, depending on that one person. And then that's going to determine how much they're going to charge that money to me or you or somebody else.
Yeah. And the goal is to either put the brakes on the consumer or business or encourage the consumer or business to speed up.
Right. So the lower the interest rate, the more likely someone's going to borrow it, the higher it is. It's going, "Yeah, I don't want to do it right now, you know, because now my payments are going to be this instead of that." So, got it. I'm Roger Humphrey, and on behalf of myself and John Lemmerman, we thank you so much for listening, and we hope you find the information really valuable. If so, please stop by Finance for Beginners for another episode. Hey, if you've got any questions, please leave them in the comments down below. I promise we will read them. The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and does not constitute financial, investment, or legal advice. The opinions expressed by the host and guests are their own and may not reflect the views of their respective organizations or employers. While we strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, financial markets are subject to fluctuations, and the information provided may become outdated or change over time. Always do your own research and consult with a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions or taking any financial actions. We may discuss products, services, or strategies, but our recommendations are not endorsements. Any potential conflicts of interest will be disclosed as applicable. We do not receive compensation for promoting any specific financial products or services. By listening to this podcast, you agree that the hosts, guests, and producers are not liable for any losses or damages resulting from your reliance on the information provided.